Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast, Unifying the IoT from Edge to Cloud on Intel Architecture. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers, Niall Ockney from Intel and Adrian Burns from Firmwave. Niall Ockney is a product line manager with the Intel Quark Solutions Division, driving key architectural MCU designs enabling Intel's Internet of Things group. Niall is responsible for QSD product portfolio management, specifically Quark SE and subsequent designs covering sensor management, WPAN and WLAN silicon-based solutions. Niall has over 25 years of experience covering ICT production and engineering management, embedded design, and technical marketing leadership roles. Niall holds a PhD in engineering and supports customers in adopting Intel MCU designs as well as the defining key feature requirements for future Quark designs. Adrian Burns is CTO and co-founder of Firmwave. With over 16 years of experience delivering leading-edge hardware and software solutions into medical, healthcare, and smart buildings, energy vertical markets, he is a thought leader in his field and has co-generated 6 patents and co-authored several journal publications. He is passionate about using technology for education and healthcare in underprivileged communities. Want to move on to some housekeeping. Today's schedule consists of about 30 minutes of presentation. That leaves us 30 minutes at the end of the hour for you to take advantage of our presenter's expertise. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your viewing console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button allows you to download and print slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box enables you to participate today. You can simply type your question into the box and submit it using the Submit button. You can submit questions at any time during the presentations. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking in the material and the question is fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A, and again, we have about a half hour, so we've got a lot of time to be able to answer your questions. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you could submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. A note that this and all Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Niall will be kicking things off today. Niall, the floor is yours.
Okay. Welcome, everybody. As Kurt has said, my name is Niall. I'm part of the Internet of Things group in Intel. What I'd like to do is maybe present some positioning slides just to explain why Intel is investing in this type of technology, and hopefully that will be provide some context and perspective for the technical conversation that's going to come as a follow-on. So, the Internet of Things, it's a well-used term over the last 12 to 18 months. How I best like to describe the Internet of Things is the integration of physical devices or things with embedded electronics, software, and sensors. So, effectively, by doing that, IoT allows these objects to be sensed and ultimately controlled across existing IT infrastructure. And that generally creates an opportunity for more direct integration of the physical world into computer-based systems and can, as a result, drive improved efficiencies, accuracies, and as a follow-on, economic benefit to the user. The Internet of Things is not just about things, it's also about how those things or devices connect to the network and to the cloud. A big part of the Internet of Things is the cloud infrastructure due to the amount of critical information that is processed and analyzed in the cloud where businesses are looking hopefully to derive value. Certainly in Intel we believe that in excess of 15 billion devices are going to be connected over the next 5 years across a range of different solutions. And really why that is so is because the cost of technology is coming down, as you can see on the slide here. From a sensorization perspective, the cost of the actual bandwidth and the cost of processing. So with these critical infrastructure costs coming down, it makes it more applicable and more usable for users, whether they be everyday prototypers or mainstream corporations, to apply this type of technology to the Internet of Things. So if we just move on a little bit, so I mean, how big is IoT? I mean, the short answer is it depends on which business analyst you want to talk to. There are plenty of predictions out there. I mean, as you can see here, Gartner estimate by 2020 there'll be in excess of 50 billion connected devices. IDC believe that's closer to 200 billion. But depending on the information source, the one thing that is common is there is a common view that the Internet of Things has the ability to improve services, the lives of ordinary people, and create business opportunities for companies. An example of that is we are seeing the rise of smart cities, connected homes, connected cars, factory floors, in terms of condition-based monitoring or the ability to predict machine wear out or failure, which would be a big part of the Industry 4.0 initiative. So it is starting to permeate the lives of people, and from the more serious, as I've said, with ADAS or automated driver assist systems, to something which may not be so serious, such as dispensing beer kegs. So the technology and the use of this technology can be widespread and can be varying. So so from an Intel perspective, I mean, how we tend to tackle this problem is there are different ways you can use this approach across a range or a plethora of different use cases. These would be some of the main categories that we would divide out the market in terms of IoT opportunity. Automotive would include, as I said, ADAS type systems, transportation systems for trucks, monitoring of trucks or monitoring of logistics. Manufacturing, akin to the Industry 4.0 initiative, would be how do we improve the connectivity and sensorization of industrial factories to improve performance, efficiency, and cost reductions. Smart ag, how do we monitor crop growth? How do we monitor patient healthcare, either in an integrated facility such as a hospital or for patients that might be in remote regions or even in their home? Retail type of solutions that we'd be looking to innovate here would be systems like smart shelving or intelligent mirrors, where customers' emotions can be monitored via the right technology. Smart homes and buildings. How can you monitor air conditioning to ensure optimum energy consumption and comfort level for users in both home and large buildings? And then transportation, as I've said, beyond engine management systems, fleet management, and again, as I said, logistics. So typically, with all of these, customers are driving a need for specific solutions, but all of those solutions would contain some common elements, such as the connecting of things or end devices, sensorized devices, how they connect to a network, and ultimately how they then connect via a network to the cloud in terms of capturing and monitoring the right data for customers to get benefit out of. So so how does Intel, from a silicon perspective, influence that? So what I'm showing here is, no doubt you're very familiar with a range of our product portfolios already. So our Xeon or Xeon Phi type products that would support cloud, data centers, and high-performance computing solutions. We have a follow-on product range, which we dub Core, which you'd be familiar with in terms of high-end personal computing solutions, and would be used in some localized server solutions. Then the Atom product, again, would be familiar to many in terms of some of the embedded applications that are used for this product, as well as lower-end personal computing-type devices. What Intel was interested in doing was, in order for us to play a meaningful part in the Internet of Things as a whole, we needed to create a range of silicon architecture that was specifically designed for the embedded market. And that's where our thought process turned to the creation of the Quark product family. It's a product range that specifically, as I've said, targeted at embedded applications. These are complete system on chip designs, and they're x86 based, so they offer a complete standardized approach in terms of software architecture that will stretch from Quark all the way through to the cloud for users that are using Intel architecture. So it's with these Quark devices that we are hoping to create connected capabilities that will allow users, and whether they be individuals, small and large companies and corporations, to start leveraging the assets that Intel offers in its Atom, its Core, and its Xeon portfolio by extending that by utilizing our Quark product portfolio. So Quark then we're offering as a part of a solution to the an Internet of Things capability. But this is only part of the type of solution that is required for this type of problem. So there are a range of areas that need to be considered if a customer or an individual is looking to create an IoT solution. So you can see here that we've looked to, highlight the key building blocks that will create a solution from the edge of the cloud all the way through gateways to the cloud. And that starts with a very important part of our process, which is our connectivity, our OS, and our interoperability capability. We're partnering with Wind River Systems, which are part of the Intel product portfolio, to offer a range of those embedded software solutions as the building block for the software stack. Then an area to consider would be security. Certainly from an Intel perspective, the McAfee software capability that is available is readily available in our product portfolio from Quark all the way through gateways into our cloud capability. And then the hardware portion of this is the Quark product portfolio, which forms the building block, the physical building block of which the software scales around. And following on from that, we offer a range of analytical tools that can be used by customers in terms of managing their data and looking for predictive analytics capability from their own information in order that they can develop their own services. And in addition to that, we offer a developer environment, and that's to allow developers to, in a safe and open source manner, develop the API capability that they wish to develop in terms of building out a capability for their own uses. So these would be, when we in Intel think of a solution, these would be the five main building blocks that we would consider to be critical. Depending on the use case, depending on the situation, some of these will have more importance. But we put a lot of thought into how we apply and give the tools to customers in these five different categories in order for them to develop quickly so that they improve their time to market if they use our products. So even with that, those building blocks, there are a range of challenges that the developer, the professional developer, still faces. As you can see here, we've just tried to categorize some of these in terms of the right type of security, what exactly does interoperability mean in terms of the applications that they want, what do they need to be connected to in terms of integration, is it hardwired, is it wireless, and do they need advanced analytics, or do they need something else? So it isn't one size fits all. It's a case of utilizing the tools that we offer and then working with us to address some of the gaps that you may find based on your own specific use cases. And what we found is this would summarize, I suppose, the range of different challenges that we see with customers. And what we would like to present to you now is one of those customers and how they've used our tools and how they've helped us understand more customer needs so that we can help improve our own capabilities for the future. So it's with that I'd like to hand over to Adrian so that we can start talking a little bit about the application of some of this capability I've just described in real-time use cases. So over to you, Adrian.
Thank you very much, Niall. Good morning, good evening, everybody. My name is Adrian Burns. I'm a software architect and also CTO of Firmwave. Niall has done given you a lot of the background of IoT there, which kind of I suppose I don't need to cover now. So in many ways, Niall has done a lot of the hard work there. So thank you, Niall, for kind of covering things at a high level. Hopefully people can hear me okay and see the slides. I want to press on here. Yeah, so Firmwave. So Firmwave is an IoT solution design company. We provide solutions into vertical markets such as healthcare, energy, smart buildings, smart ventilation, smart heating. A lot of appliance companies are beginning to embrace IoT, I would say. There's a lot of security questions in the appliance side of things that maybe we'll get a chance to talk about here. But ultimately, we provide an IoT solution from end to end to a customer. And we need ultra-low power ingredients such as the Quark microcontrollers that Niall has spoke about, not just on the ultra-low power side of things, but also, you know, on the, let's say, atom-grade, aggregator-level device in many cases where you have, for example, mesh networks to get your data all the way back to the cloud. So we take these ingredients from a number of semiconductors. We tend to take this silicon in many cases. We have to write custom firmware around that for many of the projects. And then we have to, of course, keep it ultra-low power, add the security on top, and then ultimately it's all about getting reliable data to the cloud, in which case we hand over sometimes to other companies. Sometimes we deliver a cloud dashboard, for example, of our own. That's another kind of scenario that we see quite a lot. So ultimately, we're all about ultra-low power at the edge of the IoT. And when we talk about the edge, we mean the very edge of IoT. So we're talking about in the milliwatts. And it may be for some people on the call, almost news that Intel does actually have a portfolio of ultra-low power microcontrollers, and certainly we've seen over the last 12 months these microcontrollers being used more and more in our product portfolio. So now if we look at, I think Niall has covered quite a lot of this, so I won't actually crawl over this too much, but if you look at some of the statistics around sensors, and ultimately a lot of IoT from a things perspective is all about sensors and collecting, you know, various sensor data. And the one thing I want to point out here at this point is that unlike something like the USB standard, for example, where you plug a peripheral into a laptop, and whether it's a video camera or whether it's a mouse or a keyboard, it gets enumerated and it gets almost standardized and it's just plug and play. Well, in the world of IoT right now, and we're at the front line of this, I guess, because we're dealing with the system integrators, the platform specialists, the vertical specialists, the network operators. We deal with a whole host of different kind of players in the IoT arena. And what we see is that for sensors, for example, there is no off-the-shelf standard for sensors. So there's a lot of fragmentation. There's a lot of firmware being redeveloped for different types of vertical markets, and really it's kind of a broken ecosystem almost from a sensor perspective, but we'll actually get on here to talk about ways in which that can be prevented or that can be enhanced from a sensor perspective. So I think again, this slide, I just want to point out that IoT really is not really about the things, or certainly the motivation is not coming from the things. The motivation is coming from, you know, services and service providers who see a value in actually delivering better service to the end customer. So if you see the breakdown of you know, where the revenue is actually going for IoT, you see here 3.7 trillion for for customer experience. Okay, so improved customer experience, reduced time to market, supply chain and logistics, reduced costs, and increased employee productivity. So I guess what that says to us is, and we do our own market research, I guess we spoke to probably somewhere between, I think, 200 and 300 customers, I guess, in our first year of operation. So we have our own market statistics on what are the requirements, but this would kind of add up with what we're seeing in the ecosystem when we go talking to different companies in different vertical markets. So what do we do? Well, the problem we're solving for the customer is, as I said, there's a lot of fragmentation out there. So there's three things that you need for IoT. You need security, you need connectivity, and you need device management. And I guess those three things are not very trivial. So when it comes to hardware design, certification, firmware integration, and these things, you actually need some expertise. So to get over what we see as the valley of death here on this slide, you need a lot of expertise and a lot of, experience in network and embedded computing and machine to machine and so on, which is just the IoT is just a new name for that, really. So here we are. Firmware Edge is Firmware Edge is essentially bridging this gap for our customers. So we develop the hardware and the solutions for our end customers that helps them get quicker, accelerate time to market for our customers.
Sorry, so the audio went there. Sorry, guys, can you hear me okay? I think we're okay.
So we're an ultra-low power hardware embedded software company. We specialize in the ultra-low power side of IoT. On the firmware edge side of things, this is a product that we've developed in collaboration with Intel. It's using the Quark microcontrollers, so the Quark SE and the
the Quark D2000 is called Firmwave Edge. It's a cellular variant. There's LoRa, there's Sigfox, there's a number of wireless variants of this device, and we'll talk more about those later. So the edge sensor platform, effectively, you've got, if we were to build it all, kind of break it all down into the Lego blocks that we provide, I guess there's edge analytics, there's ultra-low power hardware and firmware, there's secure connectivity, there's expandable sensing, and there's device management. And I won't dwell too long on those just now because I think we got time for Q&A to get into more detail. So on the wireless connectivity, so I said there's three kind of pillars for IoT that we see and our customers need to get to go to market. And those are, you know, device management, security, and connectivity. And here are some of the connectivity protocols, I guess, that we're seeing in the ecosystem. So you've got a lot of these new low-power, wide-area protocols that are becoming very, very attractive because they've got very long range and are really ultra-low power, what we would call really ultra-low power. So, you know, you're talking about coin cell batteries lasting for, you know, 5 to 10 years in some cases. And that's the level of ultra-low power integration that's required for many of these devices. So a lot of these devices are going out there for, you know, up to 5 to 10 years, maybe beyond. And, you know, need support for, you know, sometimes one or multiple of these kind of connectivity protocols. So I think with regard to the end customers in many cases are overwhelmed when they see, you know, a lot of these wireless protocols with various security, you know, implementations and then you kind of almost bombard them with, you know, three or four brand new protocols and they just don't know which way to turn in many cases. So I guess we try to narrow this down and offer the end customer, you know, the right solution for their particular use case in whatever part of the market that they may be operating in. We're seeing a lot of activity around cellular in the move to narrowband. We're seeing a lot of activity around LoRa, Sigfox, so some of the ultra-low power long-range stuff, a lot of sub-gigahertz radios, sometimes using Zigbee, sometimes using proprietary. But certainly anywhere you can get a long range of, you know, a couple of kilometers with a single point-to-point network is very, very attractive and, of course, very low power. Some of the deployments, I guess, that we have delivered, just to show how it touches the different verticals, I guess, we would say that most of this technology is actually pretty horizontal, as in, you know, whether you're a medical device or whether you're an automotive device or whether you're a, you know, energy monitoring device, quite a lot of the ingredients that go in here on the edge would be almost horizontal, as in your security, your device management. When I say device management, I mean firmware updates and software updates and feature updates and being able to control the devices to reboot them and to start applications and so on. That's what I kind of mean when I say device management. And security, they're all pretty horizontal in our world because whether they're going into a medical device like this one or the device that I'll show next is actually a bus stop, or at least it's a remote energy monitoring system that does advertising on bus stops. Both of these use, for example, the same, you know, the same Quark microcontrollers. They use the same software stack. They have the same firmware upgrade mechanism, and they have the same security protocols applied. So ultimately, yes, there's going to be specific, you know, vertical markets, you know, certifications and specific standards for each vertical, but ultimately the underlying technology is pretty horizontal, as we would say, so it applies to, if it's validated to work on a bus stop, it'll most likely work in a medical device or, you know, an energy monitoring device or an appliance monitoring device in the home, as in it's been validated to work and securely connected to the cloud and, you know, reliably transfer data. So That just gives you an example of some of the vertical markets, and I hope we get more time to talk about those. Who we work with, these are just a snapshot of some of the customers we work with. We could probably have a few more pages on these customers. It's a growing list, but we won't go into any detail on that because really what I want to get to here is just on the horizontal architecture. So as I said, the key kind of ingredients here that you need for platforms that are ultra-low power and sit on the edge of the IoT networks is, device management connectivity and security. And once you've got that in the form factor, both in hardware and software and the footprint that you need, then you have quite a strong portfolio to actually, or library to connect up these devices, be it in whatever vertical is of interest and whatever use case is of interest. Now I've gone through that a little bit quickly, and I hope we get time now to talk about the what you guys want to hear. I believe it's a fairly technical audience, so hopefully we can get lots of time to talk about the solutions from Intel. And with that, I'll hand it over to you, Kurt. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Adrian. Yes, we do have plenty of time. We've got a lot of great questions coming in, and again, we'll let the audience know that you can continue to ask questions during the Q&A as well. Let's start with one for Niall and then follow on with Adrian, I think, because it applies to both of you. Great question here. Is it possible that another language may play a part in IoT, like HTML did for the Internet? Now, it's a really interesting question, considering IoT is kind of a blend of sensors and embedded systems with lots of peculiar needs for on-ramps onto the Internet, but then the back end is really, just basically a WAN or the Internet. Niall, what are your thoughts on other languages that might become prolific?
I think the Internet of Things in its current form is only starting. The one thing I've been very, very surprised about is no two use cases are the same, even in the same, let's say, market category that I'd be used to looking at things. So we see customers coming to us looking for a range of different software solutions, both from a, let's say, coding from sensorization point of view, but also enterprise system support. So I have no doubt that this is going to evolve, and what we think is normal now in terms of requirements from customers is going to change. So I would tend to agree with that person's view on that in terms of that adoption, and I think there'll be a lot more going forward.
Okay, great. Adrian, do you see any new protocols or communications or languages being used for these IoT applications?
Yeah, I think in many cases, Kurt, certainly on the protocol level, from a wireless protocol point of view, there's many new protocols. But underneath those, when you actually break those down, what you see is, in many cases, old technology. LoRa is a good example. It's new, but it's based on old WCDMA technology. So yes, we see some, I guess we would call it branding. There's new names for things, but ultimately I think the same networked embedded computing systems that we were using 15 years ago are coming around again with just pretty much new names and more efficient ways of doing it, so being optimized, I guess, for IoT.
Okay, great. Niall, there's a question about Intel supporting LoRa. Are future Intel microcontrollers, will they have integrated LoRa radios, or what's the roadmap for that?
Yeah, so that's a very interesting question. So how I'd answer that is our roadmap is very much open to what customers are looking for. We haven't technically presented our full roadmap here today. We can, for people who want to get into that in more detail with us later on, we can certainly facilitate that. the engagement with Firmwave and some of the solutions that Firmwave are offering, the way we look at that is it will help us inform what type of devices that we will create going forward. SoLoRa would be part of that. We're looking at a broad range of connectivity solutions, both, let's say, 2.4 gigahertz and below and 2.4 gigahertz and above. So we're looking at cellular, Wi-Fi, BLE solutions. We're looking to offer these in our roadmap, and we're looking to modify and change and adopt these based on what customers want.
Okay.
So LoRa would be just one of those considerations that we have.
I see. All right. Adrian, does Firmwave implement Wind River's OS and device management cloud? Maybe you can kind of position your offerings with the other kinds of things that Wind River provides and how it fits into the ecosystem.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, sure, Kurt. Yeah, so Wind River has a very comprehensive system called the Intelligent Device Platform, I think, IDP, that runs on typically fairly large gateways that typically run Wind River Linux or another form of Linux and connected to the cloud, and they offer a very comprehensive set of tools and brokers on the cloud to be able to, you know, manage the networks and manage the devices. I guess what we do is we focus on the ultra low power stuff. So we're typically working at the RTOS level, the real time operating system level. Now we would support Zephyr, for example, and Zephyr would have came from, it's an open source real time operating system that's been branded as Linux's little brother. So we would use Zephyr, for example, which is kind of, you know, smaller footprint OS than Linux. So we typically don't use Linux for most of our devices, mostly because there's a number of gateway manufacturers that have very, very strong Linux gateways or aggregators or industrial grade, expensive, you know, or more expensive, more feature rich kind of gateways. We typically focus on the more ultra low power kind of sensor type low-cost gateways. So we really stick to real-time operating systems. Now, that being said, I believe Wind River have a great product called Wind River Rocket, which allows Zephyr to run and connect up to their cloud infrastructure. So in one way, the answer is yes and no. I guess we do run Zephyr, and if Wind River Rocket is equivalent to Zephyr running on that device, I guess if we can run Zephyr, we can run Wind River Rocket because the two are very much related. Just interesting to note that VxWorks, which is probably the most heavily used, and I won't say for sure, but certainly the most commercially viable and very heavily used real-time operating system for commercial industrial VxWorks generated an OS called Viper, and Viper or Zephyr is the open source equivalent of Viper. So anyone who's never heard of Zephyr, it'd be interesting just to for you guys to go and have a look at the Zephyr project, because there's things like sensor subsystems and security and 6LoWPAN stacks and things like that built in there that are very, very interesting for us.
Okay.
So that may be of interest to some of the folks here. And just on that OS point of view, we do use FreeRTOS a lot, I have to say, in Firmwave. And so we're using a combination of FreeRTOS and Zephyr. But mostly we only use Linux class devices when we really need to, and sometimes we use tools that are already off the shelf.
Okay. Great. In terms of the IO, Intel architecture from edge to hub through core, et cetera, there's a really good question about, Niall, can you position this in terms of what are the advantages from, you know, end-to-end unifying IA architecture? The question asks, isn't it about software APIs and not so much about the silicon underneath, or is there, what are the advantages?
Well, it's a bit of both. It depends on the particular application. I think in general the app software probably has a more dominant influence on that question. I think what Intel's view on this would be is there are a large number of companies and consumers out there that already have Intel architecture in terms of their business solutions, primarily on the cloud side of things, but also, as I said, connected devices. We're hoping to bring some of the standardization in terms of our x86 architecture from those particular devices down into the edge of the cloud with our Quark product portfolio. And as a result of that, we would hope that customers would see a benefit in that standardization in terms of reducing their development time and ultimately their time to market. And as well, on top of that, in terms of the security, particularly the encrypted security that we will have on these devices, as well as the connectivity and the Wind River interoperability capability that we would hope that some customers would find this compelling for them to adopt. The type of customers that we would be interested in talking to would be, as I said, customers who are using existing Intel architecture, but also customers who have got strong business models for IoT. To be open about it, I mean, not every company has that vision and that view, and this may not be of interest to customers that don't have an Internet of Things business plan or business model. But we'd hope certainly our ability to deliver standardization from the edge of the cloud all the way through to the cloud, that would be something that customers would like to consider.
Right. I guess it's not just about the runtime software itself. It's also about tools familiarity, companies trying to push from the embedded space up into the gateway, you know, cloud environment. The familiarity can provide some time to market advances, perhaps.
Sure.
There's a question about low power I'd like to ask Adrian. What is a reasonable battery life expectation for consumer IoT end nodes? And maybe you can expound upon that, like consumer end nodes versus medical IoT devices like the one you've shown. What are kind of the boundaries for, you know, use cases and battery life and where you're trying to go with your low power things?
Yeah, that's a good one, Kurt. And it's a pretty hard one to answer because not to dodge the question, but first off, on cellular, we're seeing a lot of devices that are actually wall powered, so we don't have to worry effectively in many cases about the power consumption of those particular deployments. But on a lot of the other devices where, you know, the things are being put out there for remote sensing, for example, and things are going out there for a number of years, that's really when we end up spending 50% of our engineering effort just doing power management alone. And the power management is kind of dictated by a few different factors. One, the power consumption of the microcontroller, I guess, is significant, and what kind of sleep states and power optimization modes you can get in the microcontroller. But overall, the most important metric from a power perspective is the system level power of the system as a whole. You know, how many months, how many years will it run for during, you know, normal operation, for example. And it very much depends on the duty cycle of the radio. How often are you switching on your radio and actually transmitting stuff from the device? That's a big determinant. And in many cases, what we find is we have these devices sleeping for, you know, anything up to a week, almost doing very little or nothing, maybe saving their data into RAM, which is in a very, very low power state of the MCU, and then maybe once per week it switches it on and it sends it over a radio network to actually get it back to the cloud. So there's we're certainly seeing a lot of remote sensing deployments, especially on the LW, you know, the low power wide area, LPWA side of things, where the battery is very critical. But ultimately, it takes a lot of optimization in the system level firmware around, you know, your connectivity, around your duty cycling of sensors, what's your frequency rate of actually sampling your sensor, and how often you're going to send that data up to the cloud. So I would say there's a tuning procedure that happens there once you've got your deployment in place to actually to optimize for exactly the use case you're actually going for. And again, it's a lot of customization in many cases to hit the kind of years of battery life. On the low power wide area stuff, it's kind of designed for long battery life, and it's designed for long range. So you're getting kind of stuff out of the box there that's, you know, almost pre-designed to last on a coin cell battery for 5 years. But you still have to integrate that into, you know, new sensors in many cases, and put some security in there, put some duty cycling and sensor sampling firmware. So very much depends on the use case, and but certainly if you're looking for years, they are achievable, but with the right kind of low level you know, tweaking of firmware and you know, keeping it very optimized from a power management point of view.
I see. Great, thanks. Niall, here come the security questions. So I'm going to try to smash a couple of them together. One is, asks, how important is security for edge devices? And another one that kind of dovetails into the previous question about what might be a possible benefit of an end-to-end, you know, ubiquitous solution. Does Intel have a horizontal strategy for security across chips, the Intel security software and the cloud, you know, involving TPN, security software for authentication, et cetera? So maybe you can talk about importance of security at the edge, and then talk about what the overall strategy is for security with Intel's solutions.
Well, there's a long answer to that question.
Or shall we have another podcast on that?
So it's probably, you divided that well, I think. I think from an edge perspective, certainly from our view, that'd be, and these would be the themes that we would be looking to address to our core product portfolio. So certainly one theme would be security. A second theme would be, I suppose, security, I suppose, and manageability. Second theme would be connectivity, and a third theme would be analytics. But what we're looking from a security perspective on our MCU devices, we're looking to offer a range of security capabilities because we want to extend the security capabilities that we would have at our gateway and our platform solutions. But so we take, as the industry does, security very seriously. We'll be looking to offer a range of different features, hardware root of trust, random number generator capability, secure firmware updates, authentication protocols, then segmented on-die SRAM and non-volatile memory access control, and JTAG locks. So I could go on. There's a range of hardwired designs that we have in our devices to ensure that we can securely connect to whichever gateway device or cloud that the customer's application will be using. And I'd keep that slightly separate to the second half of the question. So Intel is pushing a range of security standards from a gateway perspective. TPM, as you've said, there'd be many, many more. As Adrian has alluded to, Wind River, and we would be leveraging Wind River and their capabilities quite significantly on our gateway level solutions that would be supported by enterprise applications as well. So I confess I'm not an expert on the enterprise side of things. My focus is more on MCUs. But our security capability would be compatible with, if you want to call it the back end or the back of the house security capability that we would have in our enterprise application.
Okay.
And we will be looking to continue that improvement over time with new devices and specialized devices as well.
Yeah, that would certainly make sense to integrate it. So in terms of security for you, Adrian, what kind of security concerns are introduced by using the open source software? You mentioned FreeRTOS in particular. What kind of security concerns do we need to be aware of when we're using FreeRTOS or open source?
I think just on the open source question first, Kurt, I think there's absolutely no, SSL is classic case of open source secure software, and in terms of any of the open source operating systems, and even the commercial open source security libraries, there's no inferiority with regard to open source versus commercial. I guess the commercial software stacks will give you that kind of level of support and maybe integration that you need, but I wouldn't say there's any deficiency in terms of what open source OSs give you versus, you know, some kind of paid for proprietary solution. That certainly there's almost no relevance there, open source versus non-open source. Open source in many ways has been more validated and more tested because you have a lot of an ecosystem kind of building into it in some ways. But just on the topic of security in general, we're seeing security on any of our high volume deployments or any of our high volume customers. So the guys who are deploying, 10,000 units per month type companies, their main priority or their main requirement is a secure end-to-end network. And especially in the area of appliances, and we do some stuff in home appliances, connecting up, heaters, fridges, ventilation, lighting, and so on, that there really is a huge kind of worry out there from the high volume, manufacturers, and the security has to be thought about not just from the device, but all the way from the device through the gateway through into the cloud. So, for example, you'll find that Azure, Microsoft Azure, Amazon AWS, and IoT Watson, or IBM Bluemix, as it used to be called, have different kind of ways of kind of handling security up on the cloud side. So you really need a whole end-to-end threat model analysis done. And I suppose we've learned this over the last 2 years that we actually start every custom project that we build for a customer. We started with a threat model analysis going from edge to cloud, and it really kind of puts the customer, I guess, at ease that, these are the security vulnerabilities you're dealing with. Now, the trade-off with security is, it's security, a high level of security typically results on any end-to-end system, typically results in a less usable or a more complex system. So you kind of have to trade off the level of security you build in with the level of flexibility and the level of usability you have on your end system. But we're seeing security as being honestly our number one concern for IoT. And, every week we're reading a different article on, the ex-chief of the NSA saying that all these IoT appliances are basically going to spy on us to, real DDoS type threats. So it's a massive area, and you really need to be equipped with proper cryptography expertise to kind of, to actually patch it up from edge to cloud.
Right. Like the you mentioned security analysis. I think that's always a good thing to be incorporating, since you're worried about protecting data in flight, protecting data in rest, unauthenticated control. There's a lot of things that go into the security piece. Niall, what kind of tools and SDK, can you talk about what the user experience is for tools and software development kits for Intel architecture? And is it different from Quark to you know, the Xeon, et cetera?
Yeah, so with the MCUs that we're bringing to market, so the for instance, the D2000 or the quark sensing engine devices, we're bringing them to market with we're also creating an IoT dev kit for each of those products. So that development kit will come with an open source software stack, which we call Mint River. That software stack will be a common software stack across a range of our Quark MCU devices. It will consist of a board support package as well as QSMI software capability. So that's security interface verification. It will have a number of RTOS offerings. We're starting initially with Bare Metal and Zephyr, both nano and micro kernel offerings, as well as then a range of libraries, depending on the use cases the customers wish to develop, and then an IDE that sits on top of it. So that would be, as soon as a customer acquires our device, that is downloadable from our website, and it is open source, it's free, and it allows customers to start developing immediately. So that's a plan that we have. We wish to continue going forward with a range of our devices, so it will enable customers as quick as we can in terms of getting them developing.
All right.
So, and again, we're trying to put a lot of thought into user experience. So that would be part of what we're doing, as well as working on offering a range of different MCUs in the near term.
Okay. Thanks, Adrian. What kinds of things are FirmWave connecting to at the edge?
Okay. Yeah. I guess from a smart building point of view, it's lighting, heating, and ventilation, because they're the obvious ones to kind of save the consumer or save money ultimately, and it's a very quick return. Other things like home health monitoring devices, appliances in the home. So Niall mentioned the connected home earlier. So quite a few in that domain. Everything from bus stops to home appliances to medical devices, I guess, across those three verticals. We're also doing a lot of remote sensing in the area of agriculture and utility monitoring and crop monitoring in agriculture. And this is really where the ultra low power technology is most useful, because in many of these remote locations you don't have necessarily a cellular network coverage. So something like a LoRa network can be put up in place to kind of bridge that lack of coverage gap. So the network can actually be installed by the end user. A lot of different things, I guess, Kurt.
Right. And I suppose they're all wired and wireless, and you're talking about on-ramps onto the, internet enterprise. So you're talking about a lot, lots of different wired and wireless protocols that go into that as well, I suppose.
Yeah, and ultimately they all boil down to the same level of, firmware updates, secure updates, and secure connectivity and reliable data capturing. Ultimately, is what goes into everything.
Okay. Great, thanks. Niall, one question here. Will the Quark processor have some ORM building blocks like the NUC?
Not at the moment. But actually that is something that we are considering. But right now, no, we don't have a defined path on that just yet.
Okay, yep. So I guess it's use case driven, and it's a good idea for the person to kind of contact you and Intel and find out what kind of applications are around that.
Yeah, So I made a comment earlier, and I just want to restate it. We are looking for our roadmap is dependent on what customers want. We are dynamically changing device designs on a very real time basis, based on what customers need. So that or any other input, we will take very seriously if the opportunity is there.
Okay, great, thanks. Unfortunately, we've reached the end of the eCast. I want to thank Niall and Adrian for sharing your insights on unifying IoT. We at Open Systems Media, Intel, and Firmwave want to thank you, the audience, for attending and contributing excellent questions. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast version will also be made available there. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Open Systems Media eCasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Thanks for attending, and have a great day.